The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Let me tell you what, who deserves a shot in the United States heavyweight.
Let's hear it.
I'm the champion. I ought to know. You know, I've been sizing up guys since I came to the WCW. And I think the one guy that stands out the most, the guy that I think has earned a title shot, El Dandy, I think you're a heck of a wrestler. You're a great technician in the ring, and you're a jam-up guy. Whoa. I don't see any reason.
Wait a minute. El Dandy has been wrestling in the cruiserweight division here. Please.
He's a great wrestler.
He's a great wrestler, but thank goodness sakes, it's 50 pounds.
Who are you to doubt El Dandy? Because this guy's a serious professional.
Well, let's talk about some serious
professionals. How about hypnosis? Let's get to
psychosis.
Whatever. He's a great wrestler, you know.
Hello, and welcome to The Rawcast. I'm your host, Don DeLaRente, and I'm joined once again by my co-host, Mr. Mo to the underscore Reese. What's going on, Mo?
Nothing, another week, another episode of The Rawcast.
The Rawcast is being brought to you by the CSPN. You can find us on the web at cspn.us. You can also subscribe to The Rawcast through The WrestleCast. Dash the CSPN. Just subscribe to the logo that has the New Day holding the WrestleCast sign, and you will be listening to the Rawcast each and every Tuesday going forward. So me and Maurice will share our commentary with color on everything that happens on Monday Night Raw, and we talk a little bit of SmackDown too sometimes. So
yes, we do.
Join us if you will. Share it with a friend so they can join us as well. So we start Monday Night Raw with the commentary team welcoming us to the show. Then all the lights go out for a second. They apologize to us, and then Apollo Crews music hits. He's back. The fake United States champion is here. As the lights go off again, Byron asks, are we still on the air? Commentary says there's been bad weather in the area, and they have had intermittent electricity issues. So out comes MVP. He wants to drop some truth gems, claiming that he is a United States champion. And after tonight, when the ref counts three, this little beef between him and Apollo Crews is officially done. So we start off with the United States Championship match. MVP versus Apollo Crews. Apollo sends MVP into the corner. Shoulders send MVP reeling. Apollo rushes the corner. He hits a big splash and the spine buster. We get a pin for a two count. We get the German release from MVP, but Apollo no-sells the suplex. Then we get the huge spinning powerbomb from Apollo, and Apollo gets the pin, 1-2-3, to become the new United States champion.
Glad that we got this match out the way. It was delayed for some weeks. And Apollo came out as the true champion.
I wasn't trying to see Apollo really win the championship. I was hoping that MVP would continue to be gallivanting around with that good-looking title, but all for naught. Bobby Lashley rushes in and tries for the full Nelson, but Apollo Crews rushes out of the ring, and he holds up both United States titles. So Apollo is all smiles backstage, of course, because, you know, that's what he do. He says that Lashley's strength is unlike anyone's he's ever imagined. Because of his Phil Nelson, he sat in front of his TV and watched MVP talk that trash for weeks. But what hurt him worse, though, was his kids looking at him and questioning his title reign. He wanted nothing more than to tell them that he was the champ. So he's going to take the old title and hang it in their bedroom. And the new one, the one MVP paid for, how good does it look? It looks good, doesn't it? He says. He thanks MVP, and he says he really appreciates it. How'd you feel about the Apollo promo right there?
Well, he stays. He's going to do something. He's doing something with the old title, give it to his kids. And, you know, he's came a long way. He's getting a bit in their character. And, you know, I'm just glad that he's get to carry the new title around. Now we have to see what's going to happen going forward with this match, with this rivalry between these two.
MVP is at ringside. he's like, man, can we get a microphone that works? He wants to know what the hell kind of operation they're running here in WWE. He says, what's with the lights and the unsafe working environment? He said, Apollo should be ashamed, just like everyone else. That's how he wants to win. Lights flickering. Technical difficulties. He wants to explain something. Apollo didn't show up at Extreme Rules because Lashley left him staying at home. Then tonight, he steals United States title. Understand this. MVP says he don't care about Apollo's wife or his kids, but what he cares about is his rematch. He wants it. Shelton explains something to MVP in whisper form, and MVP says he wants the rematch at SummerSlam. MVP was like, fuck them kids.
Right.
We are back after a break to speak to the two women power trip, Bayley and Sasha. They have all the gold. Bayley drops the nicknames. They're asked if the titles will be defended at SummerSlam. Bayley calls her job, the interviewer's job, boring, and says the blonde's job does no justice to how good they are. So instead, they have a video package. So, you know, it's just a video package detailing how great they are. But at the very end, the package shows Asuka cutting a promo in the sound room that says revenge will be very, very sweet. Bayley says that that was very unprofessional. Sasha throws a fit until Shayna comes in to say that's enough of this garbage. She has some problems. She tells Sasha that she snaked her way to the title and that she's waited in line long enough. And then she knocks Sasha down with a right hand to the face. Sasha wasn't even in her wrestling gear. She had on that fire dress.
Right.
She's taking advantage of somebody who wasn't even in fighting attire. That's not cool.
She took that punch around the chin.
I don't know how I don't know how I feel about this Shayna Baszler, Sasha Banks thing. Something scares me about that. I don't want Sasha to get broken. She's had a good stretch here since she's been back from her hiatus a couple of years ago. And we'll talk about it a little bit later, but yeah, I had to hold my breath a couple of times. Backstage, Kevin Owens is looking for something to drink. Yoo-hoo is heard, and the Iconics are here to say that they'd be great guests on the Kevin Owens show. He says, yeah, but just not tonight. He's already got guests. He says, you know, he plans these things out, you know. He tells them to have a water. So we are back. Kevin Owens mentions that Shane McMahon is back, and although he has plenty of issues with him, he wants to bring out someone who has been going through a lot. So he introduces Ruby Riott. Ruby Riott takes a seat. As Owens brings up her first win in a while, Ruby says, it's no secret she's had bad luck since she came back. She's been losing since February, and the Iconics have done their best to make her feel bad about it. She's dealt with toxic and sad broads her entire life. Last week, though, she finally got to shut up Peyton Royce and put an end to the Iconics bullshit. The only thing that could have made it better is if Liv was out there to celebrate with her. Kevin Owens stands up excited and says Liv is about to come out right now. Liv says Ruby asked her to listen to what she has to say, and Owens convinced her to allow it. Owens says he saw them when they started. Dennis Mike goes out, comes back on. He says he was there when the three of them started. Sarah has moved on, but they don't need to be done. Owens says he's done a lot of really crappy things to a lot of people. He's lost friends, and it was all because he wanted to get ahead. He can stand here now and say he doesn't know if it was really worth it. He isn't saying they have to be friends, but it's worth hearing Ruby out. Ruby gets choked up, saying everything was different when she came back. Liv was thriving, coming into her own, and maybe Liv didn't need Ruby anymore. She beat her twice. Ruby points out their debut date matching tattoos. Say that five times fast. And Ruby just wants another chance to be friends. So out come the Iconics. I think it was Peyton told Liv she should have stayed in the bathtub. Billy says they're tired of hearing about Ruby's one win after 400 losses. They've got some facts. Peyton says they've dominated the tag team division, they conquered WrestleMania, and they have been better than the two of Liv and Ruby. Liv says that they're right. Ruby and Liv are not friends like Billy and Peyton, and they are not iconic, but there is one thing they will always agree on, and that's no one starts a riot better than them. Owen says the message is clear. Unless Peyton and Billy have something better to say, they can leave. Peyton says they've got nothing on the Iconics. They want a match. Owen asks for more technical difficulties for their mics only, so Peyton slaps Kevin Owens. Then Billy slaps Kevin Owens, and Owens asks for some help, and Ruby and Liv spear the Iconics. Backstage, some people are raging to some rock music in a room behind the protection of tall Bruce Leroy. So we have our tag team match, Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan versus the Iconics. Tag to Liv, who comes in and slams Peyton down, then gets tossed to the corner. Liv hits a back elbow, then flies off the second rope with a drop kick, and she gets a cover for a two count. Billy comes in to stop the pin and drags Peyton to the corner. You get a tag from Billy. Billy tries to work over Liv, but Liv hits her with a surprise roll-up and gets the 1-2-3. So Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan are victorious. Well, Peyton and Billy look to double-team Liv Morgan after the match, but Ruby comes in to save the day. She stares down Liv. They both grab Billy and hit a double STO. Thoughts, concerns upon that match?
Pretty interesting match to see them two back together. Just wanted to see this is going to be a reunion of sorts with Liv and Ruby. And where it's going with the Iconics.
Apparently there was an accident earlier today and Charlie's got the scoop. She is nearby a box that's tipped over with a bunch of random electrical equipment in it. MVP comes in to point out the ridiculousness. He lost the title because of glitches and power outages. Charlie understands his frustration. She was just informed that Apollo accepted his challenge, and MVP says, yeah, he's cool with that. So Shelton comes up and he says that his 24/7 title was stolen. MVP says they'll find it and they'll teach whoever took it a lesson. The champ, Drew McIntyre, is here. He says Orton has spent 20 years preying on vulnerability. He's not like Austin or The Rock. No, he's way better than either of those. He's the kind of man to wait till you're finished with an Extreme Rules match and hit an RKO out of nowhere. That's on Drew. Orton warned him. Thanks for the education. A lesson learned. It will never happen again. Drew knows Orton is motivated. He's just as motivated as Drew is. The similarities don't end there. Once upon a time, Vince looked at both of them and told them that they were the chosen ones, the future of this industry. But plans changed. Ed said it best. This wasn't Orton's plan A. He didn't lie awake in Scotland, thinking about how to make it to the WWE to be the first one for an entire country, being called crazy, giving it his all, and finally pulling it off. Everything has been handed to Orton. He doesn't resent Orton. He just finds it interesting how he brags of the early accolades that were fed to him because of his dad. Drew never rode in the limo with Evolution. He didn't want to either. He never had anyone cleaning up after him or his crap, his legit crap. Orton should have been fired more times than Drew. Orton comes out to stop him. He asks, is his respect for Drew not enough? Drew chooses to repay him by telling the world that Orton was handed everything and that he doesn't want to be here. If he didn't want to be here, then why is he here? He's here because he enjoys coming down to the ring and punt kicking heads. Orton is going to take that title away from him. Drew says he should have been fired years ago, and he is right. He should have been fired over and over and over again, but he wasn't. But Drew was. And why is that? Because Orton says he is more valuable than Drew ever was or will ever be. Randy says he was given chance after chance because he is the chosen one, then, now, and forever. He dares Drew right now to come up with one opinion about Orton on Drew's own, keyword original. Drew lays his title down on the mat. Orton wants him to shoot. Okay. Drew thinks Orton represents everything that is wrong with the WWE. He watched the Last Ride documentary. And Orton was interesting. He talked about Undertaker reaching down and pulling Orton up to his level. Why did Taker do that? He loves the industry and cares about the future. How many times has Orton taken a moment to reach down and pull up anyone to his level? Never. Has he ever sat down with Kevin Owens, Apollo Crews, Mustafa Ali? Any of that knowledge get passed down? Drew brings up 10 years ago when Orton was in a hole and Edge pulled him up and helped him. He remembers Orton walking past Drew while his world was crumbling. His mother was sick and Drew was self-destructing, and Orton didn't do a damn thing. He doesn't see a leader standing in front of him. He sees a selfish prick. He says, this is what will happen. He says he has a bunch of receipts to cash in. He will rip off Orton's head, and Orton will see it coming. Good stuff. Awesome promo. Nice back and forth. Real personal touch in there, because we all know how bad Randy Orton was as a youngster, and everything that Drew said about him was very, very true.
About
how many times he coulda, shoulda been fired, but he wasn't, because he's uber talented, and he was the youngest, one of the youngest people to ever be in WWE. And, you know, they let him grow up and get all the shenanigans out of him. Backstage, Nia is talking to Pat Buck, the gentleman whose clothes she ripped up last week. Backstage, Kevin Owens is talking to Ruby and Liv when Ric Flair comes up to shoo the girls away. He says he's been following Kevin Owens. He's held him in such high esteem. Everyone loves Owens, but maybe he's turning into too much of a guy that is too worried about helping the other kids instead of taking care of himself. Owens says he is no guidance counselor. These girls are just his friends. The thing is, he sacrificed friends and done a lot of shitty things for the top spot, and now he's just trying to take a different way there. He wants to be the person in the locker room that they look up to. He's trying to be what Randy could be. Flair says he's going to let that breathe. Flair says instead of giving Owens advice he might want to listen to, this is what Owens needs to listen to. Mind your business, stay clear of Orton, and maybe he will get a match for the title at SummerSlam. Owens says if Flair is so worried about his career, Owens will show Flair what kind of fight he has next week when he takes on Randy Orton. Does that inspire you, Kevin Owens and Randy Orton?
It does. It moves me a little bit.
How have you... Kevin Owens is so often on the show, though. He's like on it for 2 weeks, off of it for 3 weeks, on it for a week, off of it for 2 weeks. So it's like, you know, you never know when you're going to see him.
That's true.
Nia is in the middle of the ring with Pat Buck. She is here to own up. We get a clip from last week of the transgression that happened. Nia talks to the heart of the millions around the world who idolize her. So when a scrawny runt from WWE management who couldn't cut the mustard in his own career steps to her, it's her responsibility to step back. Oh, Pat, she couldn't see him. She knows he wants an apology, but instead, Nia wants to offer him an opportunity to prove she's wrong with the match. Pat says he's only here for the apology. Nia says he will get one after their match. They can settle it right here and now. Nia wonders if Pat is scared. She thought he'd have more fire, being a fighter and all. This angers Pat. His face goes as red as his hair. Pat tells Nia that she is indefinitely suspended without pay. So Nia flips out, saying he has no authority. She rips his sleeves on his jacket down and headbutts him in the chest, and then Nia kicks him out of the ring, sending him to the floor. So as Nia makes her way to the back, R-Truth comes running out with the 24/7 title. He's being chased by the ninjas. Shelton Benjamin is here, and we're informed of an upcoming triple threat match for the 24/7 title. Let's talk about Nia Jax. I knew somebody was in for it. She had them beat a bitch braids up. She had the braids in to the back. It's like, oh, yeah, they're going to be nice for somebody. Pat Buck would be that somebody.
Pat Buck died again.
Yeah, he had his Mark Henry salmon jacket on. Akira Tozawa versus R-Truth versus Shelton Benjamin for the 24/7 championship. You get a powerbomb from Shelton Benjamin. Truth fires out of the corner with right hands, then a kick to the chin, a kick to the chest. Truth misses his axe kick, and we get pay dirt by Shelton. In comes a ninja doing flips. Shelton takes umbrage and kicks his head off. In the ring, Akira falls off the top rope with the senton, while MVP and Lashley are taking on some ninjas on the outside. Akira Tozawa gets the cover and gets the 1-2-3, and he is the new 24/7 champion.
And that's the way the cookie crumbles.
I don't like the way this is unfolding for my favorite faction, the Hurt Business. It's a lot of building up that they've done in the last month and a half. They sure are tearing it up down in this episode.
That they are.
We head to the backstage area. Shane is here to show us a Raw Underground. There's a ring with no rope, some dudes surrounding it and tapping hard on the mat, while two guys in the ring tussle. We come back from a commercial break, and backstage, Dominic gets some interview time. Dominic Guerrero, that is. He is asked why he continues to take the risk and show up while Ray is out recovering. Dom says that it may be crazy to keep fighting, but it's easy to know why he's doing this. He literally witnessed his dad get blinded, so he thinks it's understandable. If anyone thinks he's crazy now, they'll think he's nuts when he challenges Seth Rollins to a match at SummerSlam. You know, as much as I hate on Dominic Guerrero, the kid does have some promise. He talks really well. He handles the promo situations pretty good. And he's actually shown some acclimate when it comes to being physical, to actually being able to handle himself and hold his own. So I'm very impressed, even though I do like to see him catch the beats by Dominic Guerrero. Sasha Banks versus Shayna Baszler.
And this is the issue, Byron, that we talked about for quite some time with the golden role models. Anytime you're even in a one-on-one match, you're basically in a two-on-one scenario.
You're absolutely right. I mean, Sasha Banks and Bayley are very talented, are exceptional athletes, but they do cut corners whenever they have the opportunity to do so.
Think about the means by which Sasha Banks finally captured the Raw Women's Championship, the very specific stipulation to the championship match that we saw between Banks and Asuka, laid down by Stephanie McMahon to get some finality.
Yeah, but even then, Bayley played a role.
Listen, you guys keep harping about Sasha Banks not being a real champion. Let's face it, she is the real champion, right? She came through with those stipulations that Stephanie McMahon came up with, and she walked away with the gold, so I don't see what the discrepancy is.
Joe, I understand your point, but what honor is there? Oh, and winning a title via count out. Yeah. On top of that, it took Bayley attacking Asuka's best friend, Kairi Sane.
If I remember correctly, Kairi ran after Bayley. All right, she went looking for that fight.
Earlier tonight, Bayley and Banks said that was part of their plan. And now Baszler. Baszler trying to out-muscle Banks. Oh, that was nasty. High on the back of Banks. Oh, now Baszler. Baszler nearly got caught by the balls.
And here we go.
Looking for the Carol for the clutch. Trying to avoid it. Sasha Banks. Caught right to the back. Very smart there by Baszler.
Oh, this is where the pain and the suffering comes into play.
It's got Banks right where she wants her.
Or does it?
Uh-oh. Bank statement by Sasha.
Oh, now she's fighting those hands. She's doing her best to fight those hands.
And Baszler trying to separate the hands of Sasha Banks. Can Baszler get out of this submission? If there's anyone that knows the way out, it's Shayna Baszler. All right, Sasha Banks able to take down Baszler. Oh, my. Oh, what a response by Baszler. And Baszler desperately needed that kick. Wait a minute, it's Asuka. Asuka attacking Bayley from behind.
Well, there will be revenge. And it's coming tonight.
Asuka furious with Bayley on poor Sasha Banks. Asuka turning her attention to the Raw Women's Champion inside the ring.
You can completely understand where Asuka's coming from.
And Sasha Banks trying to get out of here with both her titles.
Oh, Sasha's going to take off now.
No, 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 no,
Asuka rushes into the ring and tries to attack Sasha. Sasha grabs her titles and heads to the outside with Bayley. They sit against the barricade as Asuka screams in the ring. In the ring, Asuka is still standing, ready for an interview. We are taken back to the end of the Asuka versus Sasha match from last week. Charlie asks Asuka for an update. She says Kari will be okay, but now she is not here. Sasha and Bayley are here, and Asuka is here, so she wants a rematch against Sasha for the title at SummerSlam. Shayna is still in the ring, and she has a mic. She says she doesn't want to fight. She is cheering for Asuka. She wants Asuka to win back the Raw Women's title from Sasha, and she will be rooting and cheering and clapping the entire time. She will be so excited to dismember Asuka and take the Raw Women's Championship off of her. Sasha comes back out. She's laughing maniacally. She has a message for the both of them. She says this is her title, and she will give Asuka a rematch if she can be a former NXT Women's Champion, a member of the Four Horsewomen, and her best friend, Bayley. And of course, Bayley is shocked and dismayed at this revelation. Two women power trip. A little sticky this week.
Right. I mean, Sasha's doing what Bayley has done to her in the past. And we love to see it.
I was definitely very afraid for Sasha's well-being in this match. There was one sequence where Shayna Baszler does like a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker.
I was
just like, oh, that's it. She's broken in half. She's going to be injured. But thankfully she wasn't. Sasha has definitely improved her ground transition game because she was actually keeping up with Shayna with a lot of this mat wrestling and these holes, wrestling. So good for Sasha to expand her game and not just rest on her laurels and adding some new things and new holes into her game. So greatly appreciated here. Backstage, Angel Garza is getting a number from this blonde chick who apparently was like on The Bachelor or is on The Bachelor. I don't know.
Yes.
In comes Andrade, and Angel introduces the blonde lady. Zelina says she doesn't belong here. Angel says, yes, she does. So then we come back, and we are at Shane's Raw Underground, which is basically a updated version of Fight Club meets Brawl for All. Shane introduces some big dude. there's a dude hits a powerbomb and wins a match because the guy can't continue. Shane declares him a winner and passes by some chicks dancing. Shane says to wait till we see what he has in store for us next. So we come back. Shane introduces some big dude, and he doesn't waste time with the jobber. Another guy takes off his shoes to come in, and the bell rings. The guy kicks a few times, but he gets belly-to-belly down. The big guy drives some elbows into the face until Shane calls the match. Shane raises the hand of the big guy and declares him, you know, the winner and asks if anybody else wants some. All right, so let's talk about it, sir.
Okay.
This is what everybody's going to remember this episode for, regardless of how good that Drew and Orton promo was or the first time you saw Shayna and Sasha wrestle each other in a real live match. Everybody's going to be talking about Raw Underground. Did it work or not?
I'd say for just something that they introduced to us for the episode, it worked. We got to see faces that we primarily see either on 205 Live or NXT. Shout out to Swerve losing his money. Swerve losing his money, and then we seen D.O. Madden. He was involved in one of the contests, and it kind of just gave certain individuals something to do during this time period.
I like the concept of a, since they have so many quote unquote shooters on Raw with Shelton and Dolph and Bobby Lashley and, you know, Shayna Baszler and Asuka and all these people who are like legitimate people who can stretch you. I like that there may be a place where the shooters can shoot. But we'll see how long that they continue this up, if it's only going to be for a 1 or 2 week span, or if they're going to try to keep weaving this in each and every week. In the ring, the Street Profits stand tall and they talk about last week's attack. Dawkins says he's going to holler at that blonde chick that Angel Garza was just talking to. She needs to come get a rose from him. Ford tells him to focus. They bring up Zelina putting Andrade and Garza together like it was nothing. Montez said the Street Profits are family. Ford removes his glasses. They are brothers. Angel and Andrade attacked them twice. So I guess they're done playing nice, because the Street Profits say they want to smoke. So that leads us into Angel Garza versus Angelo Dawkins. Garza underhooks Dawkins looking for the wing clipper. Angelo escapes and hits a spinning splash, then a running bulldog. Well, Montez Ford is very excited and he's doing his Ultimate Warrior shake of the ropes when he collapses and falls right in front of the announce table. So, of course, Angelo is distracted and he goes to check on him. That allows Garza to super kick Angelo Dawkins. Then he drop kicks him in the face and he gets the win with the 1-2-3 over Angelo Dawkins. So they help Montez Ford to his feet. I guess they give him some type of, you know, battery test. And he's allowed to compete in the very next matchup as Montez Ford takes on Andrade. Ford flips over Andrade. He hits a huge clap box in the ears. Andrade goes up in the corner. Ford rushes in but gets kicked. Andrade goes to the top rope and we get a drop kick from Ford to Andrade that kicks him to the outside of the ring. Montez hits the ropes and flips over the top onto Andrade. Montez Ford gets back in. He goes full Ultimate Warrior again on the ropes. And again, he passes out. And this time, the ref calls for the bell. The ref calls for a doctor and tells Andrade and Angel to back up and get away. The match is over. A doctor comes in to check on Montez Ford. And Angelo Dawkins is highly concerned by his side. Now, I've been saying that Montez Ford, the HBK of this team, and clearly Bruce Pritchard sees the same thing, because they gave him the HBK passing out in the middle of the ring.
I mean, he was pumped up and doing his ring. He was shaking the ropes. Next thing you know, he was on the mat. Out.
Yeah, it had to be something in that num-num juice.
Had to be.
Backstage, Buddy Murphy is more concerned with what he did last week than what's going on in the ring. Seth tells Murphy that he made the right decision and should be proud of himself. Tonight, they have to focus on the future. Murphy asks about the SummerSlam challenge. Murphy thinks it's ridiculous. Shane is here in the underground with one half of the Viking Raiders. He's taking on the jobber. It's Eric from the Viking Raiders. He mounts the jobber. He starts on him with the ground and pound and locks up from behind and slams the jobber down. He beats him down with some right hands. Then we get a German suplex and then a kick sends the kid out of the ring, but someone throws him back in. Eric hits him with the knee. He flips him over. He hits him with another knee to the face and the young kid is not completely out. That's the most vicious and beastly he's looked in a while. Maybe since the New Japan days. He looked like a straight killer right there.
Right.
Outside of the trainer's room, Charlie waits for an update. Angel Garza comes up. He says he knows that she is scared, but she doesn't need to be. He says he can bring her joy, laughter, and love. In comes Zelina Vega, who tells Charlie that they are all concerned about Montez Ford. He's an amazing competitor and an even better champion. She wonders what this means for the titles come SummerSlam. So Dawkins comes out of the training room. He says he isn't sure yet, but the docs are saying that Montez Ford may have been poisoned. Angel, Zelina, and Garza are all like, what? Huh? How could that have happened? That's when Bianca Belair comes out and says they have one chance to answer this question right. Zelina wonders what she is insinuating. Bianca knows one of them did it. She says Zelina is the brains. Zelina says, yes, she is the brains, but she would never jeopardize an opportunity. Bianca removes her earrings, so you know what's on. So she goes after Zelina. Zelina is held back. Bianca is held back. And we have a little bit of a issue brewing between the, Binky isn't necessarily a manager, but she is Montez Ford's wife. So I guess that makes her by default a manager of the Street Profits. Binky, too real for WWE TV. Nothing she says sounds like somebody wrote that for her.
Soon she's going to take off, she took off my earrings and other jewelry. Charlie was like, "Up, oh, that's a universal sign. Somebody about to get their ass whooped."
Charlie hasn't gotten this far in this business by being a dummy.
That's true.
And obviously, she's hung around her share of black women before when things are getting ready to go down. Because she wasn't sticking around to see the outcome. We have some footage from outside of the Performance Center from earlier today. There are five hooded people dressed up in ninja suits who toss a bunch of flaming Molotov cocktails onto a big generator that was outside the Performance Center. I have a question for you.
What's that?
They teased that Shane McMahon was going to be bringing a faction.
Right.
But clearly somebody decided that they needed to be a change in the show, because we never saw no faction. Instead, we saw just a bunch of guys standing around a ring beating the hell out of each other in a semi-shoot fashion. So why did they be misleading, or are the people who threw these Molotov cocktails actually the faction dressed up as these ninjas?
I would say we have to wait and see what's going on, because they said a faction will be introduced, and we got some clues with the Hurt Business and with this new faction that's bubbling right now.
It's been very, they're trying to boost ratings because Raw has hit like the absolute skids. The last like 3 weeks, they've just had like the worst third hours in the history since they've started having a third hour, which is almost a decade old now. They've had really low numbers just in general, so they are doing anything they can to try to spice it up, keep people engaged. And, Shane McMahon being back on Raw was some sort of a selling point. They waited to the third hour to show us anything from this Raw Underground, so... I guess they're trying to do what they can to maintain their viewership. Backstage, MVP, Lashley, and Shelton are all suited up nicely. Charlie comes up to remind them of all the bullshit they done went through tonight. MVP insults Charlie, then brings up the mysterious happenings. He says things are going down tonight, and this is Charlie's question. Lashley calls the Raw Underground a stunt, and MVP says, yeah, he's got a good point. Charlie needs to be asking about that sabotage. Shelton says that it's such an odd coincidence that this all happened on the same night that this Raw Underground thing shows up. Charlie says all she knows is that the Underground fighting is over there, and MVP knows where they are going next. We get a lengthy recap of the Seth and Ray saga, then we move to the happenings between Seth and Dominic. Seth comes to the ring to issue a statement, but before he does this, he and Murphy have some housekeeping to attend to. Seth turns his attention towards Tom Phillips. He has a few questions for Tom. He says, number one, do you consider yourself a professional and unbiased journalist? Do you take pride in your job and your body of work? Seth wonders what Tom was doing last week when Ray's son was assaulting Seth with a kendo stick. Seth wants to remind him, Tom was cheering on Dominic, inciting his rage. Seth says that Tom is the voice of Monday Night Raw, and what he says matters. He says Tom is a part of the greater good, whether he likes it or not, and what he says is important. It's his job to call it right down the middle. Samoa Joe is looking noticeably annoyed. Seth says Tom is creating bias and doing a poor job, and if he is doing a poor job, then he becomes a liability. Seth thinks the time has come to find a new voice in Monday Night Raw. Seth tells Murphy to get him. Joe stands up to defend Tom. He says this isn't going to happen. Joe thinks Murphy is going to make a difference. Joe says he's going to make it clear. Walk back in the ring, make your point, or Joe will slap Seth in the lips and beat down Murphy in front of Seth. Joe wants to be clear. Joe is laughing harder than anyone at the table. Seth looks at Joe, says he doesn't want to do this. Joe says, oh no, he does want to do this. So Joe removes his headset. Murphy backs up. Seth and Murphy roll into the ring and says what happens in the ring is not Seth's responsibility. So we go to a commercial break. We come back. Seth and Murphy have chairs in the ring. And from behind, Dominic Guerrero attacks Seth with a kendo stick. Seth grabs the stick and swings, but Dominic ducks and he hits Murphy. Dominic mounts up. Murphy starts landing punches. Seth is hanging on to the ropes, and we get a 619 from Dominic. Dominic goes to the top rope. It's a huge splash onto Murphy and Seth, who are both on the outside. Dominic re-enters the ring. He grabs a chair, smacks the mat. Then Seth runs to the top of the ramp, and he accepts Dominic's challenge for a match at SummerSlam.
I'm sure Dominic has been practicing at the PC off camera. I'm sure his father had been training him and, you know, things like that. So I'm sure that we'll get a good match. We'll get a somewhat good match out of these two at SummerSlam.
It's going to be a very intriguing match. I don't know if it's going to be good. They'll probably keep it short. If they keep it short, then it has a chance to be real good. But if they want to try to get, like, 12 minutes out of the kid, might be a little bit deeper than he's able to water than he's able to swim in right now. But we'll see. I mean, he's been impressive at every turn, like I said earlier. So why wouldn't this be any different? We're back to Raw Underground. Dolph Ziggler is in there, and he's battling against some jobber. He mounts on the back. Then Ziggler locks the waist with his legs and drops in some elbows. Then he locks in the chokehold slash sleeper, and the dude taps out. Well, in come MVP Lashley and Shelton. Lashley enters the ropeless ring immediately. MVP has an announcement. Until further notice, Raw Underground is under new management. The Hurt Business is controlling it, and since they all like to fight, they came to fight. So let's get this started. Who wants to step up to Lashley? In comes Jobber. He gets powerbombed and hit with the right hand, and Lashley is declared the winner of that bout. MVP says he wants some action. A short dude comes in, and MVP mounts him and then drops elbows into his face. The ref stops MVP. Lashley tosses the next Jobber out of the ring. MVP wants to know who is next. Shelton is in the middle of the ring too. D.O. Madden calls out Shelton. Shelton shoots the legs and mounts and then lands a bunch of punches. He drives a knee into the head and then into the side, and the guy gets rolled off the mat. MVP, Lashley, and Shelton all leave the ring to beat up the guy surrounding the ring. Poor Swerve got the beats on this too. They beat them all down. They're asking who wants next, who is left to fight. Shane congratulates them. MVP says they are the Hurt Business, and business is booming. And that was how your Monday Night Raw ended.
Okay, so let's kind of get this into perspective here. Hurt Business comes in and destroys the first offering of Raw Underground.
Okay.
So are you feeling that this is a way for them to be built up as a legit faction, even though they kind of showed who the faction was that was being introduced, who was fucking with the Generator and everything?
No, because building up a faction is having them win title matches and hold belts and win matches. The things that they have been doing for the past month and a half. Tonight did nothing. It was a regression. They took the belts off of them, and then they had them beating up guys who aren't even quote-unquote main roster people. I don't understand how this makes them stronger.
Well, reporting, you know, I'm always in the sheets, always in the news and everything. So they're looking to bring back factions as a way as to how it was during the 90s. And not bringing back, like, the Nation Domination, nothing like that. But you know how they had multiple factions in the company at a certain time. So they filed for the trademark for the Hurt Business, and they filed for Justice. That's J-U-S-T-U-S. So we should be seeing something building up towards SummerSlam with the factions and everything.
Well, if you're a real student of the pre-Attitude Era, it was the factions that really were a big part of what got Monday Night Raw back on track. They had the Nation of Domination, they had DOA, they had the Los Boricuas, they had the Hart Foundation or the Hart Family. So yeah, there were a bunch of factions spread all over Raw in late 97, early 98, and it led to, you know, part of the turnaround, because that's what set Stone Cold apart, was everybody else was in some type of group or had some type of association, and except for Stone Cold, he was the lone wolf of the day. So I mean, factions coming back could be cool. They just got to make sure that, you know, they do the same thing that they did back then, is that individually and collectively, that everybody has something that people care about and care for. So what was your assessment of this week's Monday Night Raw? I feel your energy is a little low for this episode.
It was low in some parts, but I'm still liking to see, I'm liking to see what the bill is for with the Hurt Business. Raw Underground, with this initial offering, was pretty good. We just have to see how they're going to build on it for next week, because it looks like it got the ratings back up to where they need to be. So we're going to see how they build on it for next week. Bayley and Sasha, you know, they're just absolutely, you know, excellent at everything. We get a good match with Shayna and Asuka. I'm going to get Bayley and Asuka next week. Yeah, we get Bayley and Asuka next week. I was hoping it would be, but Shayna said she wants Asuka to win so she could take the title from her. That'd be a good match. That should be something that's held out for the fall end of the year. But I mean, I enjoyed it. You know, it was just certain, you know, like this week, we got the Hurt Business that ended the show. I was awake for that. I didn't fall those off and wake up the Miz, you know, for his game show and everything.
I really liked the United States Championship match, even though I didn't really care for who won. The Dominic Guerrero stuff was really good. Montez Ford was great with his, you know, feigning spell and everything. But there was a lot of talking, a little bit too much talking for my liking when it comes to doing these Monday Night Raws. Much rather be talking about matches, but I guess we're 3 weeks, soon to be 2 weeks away from SummerSlam, so they gotta kind of get these feuds and everything in line and in focus. So I guess they figured they could do that easier with dialogue than with
action. I mean, but you know, Samoa Joe, how he stuff with Tom Phillips was pretty good.
Oh yeah. Samoa Joe was really good. I don't know if Samoa Joe is ever gonna come back to wrestle, but yeah,
I hope he does, because he came up, he was like, he stood up to, I'm gonna beat Murphy down. I'm gonna come and handle you. I'm like, I'm just sitting here like, come on, let's do it. And in the fans, the people, the PC was like, beat his ass.
Yeah, Samoa Joe definitely is missed in the ring and on the mic cutting a promo as a, you know, every week wrestler. But I think he actually may be more value to the company long term by, you know, sticking in this announcer role. I mean, I'm pretty sure he wants to come back. I don't know what his health status is. I don't know how close he is to being cleared or if he has been cleared, and they're just be like, hey, you know what, you're pretty good right here. Stay right here and do this, because the chemistry is pretty good between him, Tom, and Byron. Much better than it was than when they had Dio Madden up there.
Dio Madden, who else was it? I know Jerry Lawler was there, and
Tom Phillips, was it? Or was it it's the guy from Vic Joseph.
Yeah, Vic Joseph, yeah.
So,
and so another note, so Dave Meltzer was talking to a fan, was answering questions on Twitter, and someone asked about Austin Theory. So he's on an unannounced suspension. So basically he was suspended, but it wasn't like made public or anything like that. So that's why we haven't seen him running with Seth and Murphy.
So kind of what we suspected, got caught up in the speaking out movement, and he's basically being punished below the radar, huh?
Hey, man, Velveteen.
Yeah, it's been a tough 2020 for old Velveteen Dream. Looked like the world was going to be his oyster when it came to NXT. And maybe he was supposed to be the first double champion, but everything that was meant for Velveteen Dream seems to have fallen right into the lap of Keith Lee.
Yep.
So at this time, we're going to switch over, talk about a little bit of SmackDown, do a little quick recap of some major things that happened on SmackDown. I like the old school promos they used to kind of start the show, little, you know, 45-second kind of insert promos, just people talking about what they were going to do, who they were facing later on in the night. Their objectives and everything they wanted to accomplish on the show. I thought it was a good, you know, lead in.
It was.
AJ Styles retained the Intercontinental title over Grand Metalik. It's a pretty good match. You know, Metalik got his spots in, but AJ Styles doing what AJ Styles does, retaining the IC title. Baron Corbin, he got a win over Drew Gulak. After the match, you know, Matt Riddle comes down there and tries to get him a piece of Baron Corbin. When Matt Riddle gets attacked by Chad Gable, because Baron Corbin was spitting some real to him in the back, talking about, hey, you need somebody to collect this king's ransom. Why not it be Chad Gable? So Chad Gable comes down and he slams around Matt Riddle, leaves him laying. And he looks over at Baron Corbin and he basically gives him the money sign. Says, you know, he needs that king's ransom. Big E, in his first singles matchup in a very, very long time, was the first matchup since he staked out on a singles career. He defeated The Miz with the stretch muffler. Pretty good matchup here. Johnny Morrison was out there doing his Johnny Morrison shenanigans until the ref kicked him to the back. Even of the odds, and Big E was able to take it from there and get the win. Now, I know you have some comments that you want to talk about as Mr. Booker T, our favorite old school, old head wrestler on this show, seems to be coming up every week here lately. Has some thoughts about Big E and what he needs to do now that he is embarking on this singles run. And our good man Xavier Woods was like, nah, player, we got this far by not listening to nobody, so why should we start now?
Right. And basically what I said on Twitter was that, you know, Booker T should be more, you know, aware, would be see more recognizing how, you know, black talent in the wrestling is coming up on their own, and how they're trying to, they're carving out their niche for their own so they can get ahead and everything. It wasn't like back when he was in WCW and he came in with Stevie Ray, and you know, they were Harlem, they were, you know, Harlem Heat, and you know, they was a top tag team, but you know, they had, you know, they didn't really have you know, they weren't able to shed a spotlight or nothing like that. So basically they had to scratch and claw to where they needed to get to for themselves. And it basically just hurts to see Booker T just tear down all the work that these black wrestlers are doing. And this is why Sasha, you know, stood up for Naomi and was like, you know, just keep doing what you have to do. You know, you don't have to worry about, don't worry about nobody tearing you down and everything. Just keep doing what you're doing. And the same thing with Xavier said, you know, he was like, we didn't get this far by listening to what everyone had to say. We did what we had to do, and we came out on top.
Speaking of Naomi, she defeated Lacey Evans with a roll-up. And she debuted a new move. She made an attempt at the sliding blockbuster, but Lacey Evans wasn't trying to cooperate, so it didn't look as sick as it could have. It kind of looked more like a Canadian destroyer that got botched, but Naomi sent out a tweet, cleared it up for everybody, saying that she likes to do the blockbuster, but she wanted to do a variation of it, and so she attempted to do the sliding one, and she says that she will have it perfected the next time we see it.
Mm-hmm.
Now for the part of the evening that you and Jade to the Max, I'm sure, got to the edge of your seats for. Otis and Mandy were finally back. Mandy details in a lot of detail how she's going to get all dolled up and she's going to meet Otis and they're going to have a night on the town. Well, while she's doing that, Sonya Deville creeps up behind Mandy and proceeds to beat her senseless. It was a little uncomfortable.
It was.
She was trash talking her, stomping her, kicking her, throwing her into all the makeup and stuff. I mean, she did everything but like throw her face through the mirror. She even got some scissors, started cutting the blonde hair of Mandy. She then found some clippers and was about to make the child ball headed as a cue ball. But finally, the refs and the officials came in and stopped her and separated Mandy Rose from Sonya Deville. But yeah, the damage had been done. Mandy Rose was scarred up, beaten up, bruised up.
Yeah, this was crazy. And so, Mandy Rose didn't come on social media the next or the next day. And Sonya Deville was like, you know, talking more trash, saying, you know, Fashion Nova's going to suffer from her not being on social media promoting her beauty and everything like that. And I was like, dang, I didn't know she had to deal with Fashion Nova. That's crazy.
Yeah, this was vicious, man. Sonya Deville really turned it up a notch and a half for this beating, and yeah, like I said, I was highly uncomfortable at some points. Like, come on, man, to get at least a lick in. Nah.
Did you at least pinch the bitch?
what happened?
No, like when he said on Players Club, did you at least pinch the bitch? And she got, I mean, she was done, and she was just, you could tell that was just a beat down that she had built up for weeks.
Bayley defeated Nikki Cross to retain the SmackDown Women's title. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross have a little spat, which leads to Nikki Cross pushing Alexa Bliss down before Nikki Cross left the ring. Well, the lights flicker and they go red, and the Fiend appears behind Alexa Bliss. He comes around, he kneels down, he's kind of like caressing her and smelling her hair. And then he attacks her with the mandible claw, lays her out, and that's how SmackDown ended.
Oh man, that was something. He just shows up and puts it and gives her the claw.
Yeah, nobody's safe. He said that nobody was safe.
He said that. Yeah. He said nobody was safe.
He said he was unleashed again, so I guess we're back to the Fiend, you know, putting his fingers in people's mouths when the opportunity presents themselves.
That's true.
So I wonder how they're going to tie this in with LeBron, because, you know, at the Extreme Rules, you know, Alexa Bliss was one of his objects of desire that Braid used against him to get the upper hand. Now, that was just all like a mystery or like a dream sequence. But now he's attacked Alexa Bliss in actual, you know, WWE parameters. So Braun Strowman, we haven't seen since the match in the Swamp. So how is this all going to play out and give us a match that we might halfway look forward to at SummerSlam?
We will have to see.
Yeah, this Friday, that's going to be a big drawing part, I think, of the show, is to kind of find out the aftermath of Alexa Bliss. Is she going to be off of TV for a while? Is she going to undergo like a character change because of what happened? Or just kind of how they're going to play it is going to be very interesting, I think, going forward, especially as it ties into the larger story with Braun Strowman and The Fiend coming up at SummerSlam.
That's true.
Anything that else that stood out to you for SmackDown, or just your overall thoughts of the show?
I knew that the frustration from Nikki was building up when like post match and everything, and that whole thing just turned. I wonder how she's gonna react to that. You know, she was upset and frustrated, and then after she leaves, Alexa gets attacked. I enjoyed the Big E Miz match. You know, he was talking much trash to Corey Graves, and Corey Graves, you know, once he won the match, he was just basically like, you know, he said he gonna prove them. Prove that they say it's wrong. He's gonna have an amazing run, and we want to see Big E win, you know, on SmackDown. Also, Sheamus, he's saying that, you know, he's not Jeff Hardy's problem anymore. He said he's the locker room's problem now, so he too is going to be looking for an option. Object of obsession now that his storyline with Jeff Hardy is over with the bar fight. I enjoyed had the little backstage segment with Cesaro and Nakamura. They was talking about with the Lucha House Party, and they was, you know, talking about you didn't win or nothing like that. So this is only a winners only party. But I think they're challenging them for the title next week, upcoming, something like that. The SmackDown Tag Team Championship. So that should be a good match.
Yeah, I thought SmackDown was really fun. Like I said, the Sonya Deville thing was a standout. AJ and Grand Metal League was really good, really fun match. Big E getting that singles win to start this new run. Hopefully good things come to him and we can take this ride with him all the way to the Universal title. And I'm very interested in seeing if Baron Corbin gonna come up off them stacks for yeah. Chad Gable, or if it was just a you know, just a plot and a ploy, and Gable didn't, and Corbin really doesn't have any intentions of paying this thing off. But yeah, I'm really intrigued by that, actually.
Yeah. Also, want to give a shout out to Nikki and Bree on the birth of their brand new boys, a day apart.
Yeah, man, it's that twin gene. You know, they can't do things too separated yeah. from each other. So, I mean, you know, they'll be like cousins, but they'll probably be more like brothers as yep. they grow up with each other. So yeah, very very good to hear that babies and moms are both happy and healthy. So
and then people on Twitter going to say were like, you know, that's the one title that John Cena couldn't win is being Nikki Bella's the father of Nikki Bella's child.
Something tells me John Cena, deep down in his heart, didn't want to ever win that title.
John Cena is out here living his best life. He got like new shows, got new like a new anime cartoon coming on Sci-Fi. You know, he's doing commercials. He's definitely living a wonderful, his wonderful life.
Yeah, and he hasn't popped up on Raw in a while, so that's even better.
Yeah, he's doing TV shows and everything, so he's doing that Hollywood route.
Oh, he's doing all the stuff he claimed The Rock was doing that he would never do. Right. Yeah, I remember. Okay. Yeah, but that's the game, man. If you can get to the age where you get in your 40s and TV starts calling, you definitely need to go.
Look at Charlotte and wait.
The Rock and his ex-wife are very savvy, and they bought the XFL, what's left of it, for $15 million. So I don't know what they have planned for it, but they own it. And so
they like real life Spencer Stretchmore.
Yeah,
it was and the creditors were trying to stop it, but it was like they were the only group qualified to buy it out. And so someone did the whole when Shane, they kind of flipped it with The Rock. They said the signature is going to be a former WWE champion, but it's going to be like The Rock. They did that whole when Shane went to Panama City and he bought WCW.
Yeah, I don't know what he's going to do with it. I mean, they don't have any employees. I mean, everybody got let go. So he has these, I guess he has these franchises, and that's it, and the names, and some properties, you know, intellectual property, I guess, of the logos and things. But right now there isn't anything substantial that he can say that he has. Like, he doesn't have a stadium or anything like that that he owns with this deal, but... You know, The Rock is very creative. Danny Garcia, his ex-wife, is very, 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 very smart when it comes to business and money deals. So I'm sure that they've got some grand plan that in 3 years we're going to be like, oh, this is what they're going to, this is what they had plans for. And we're going to be like, this is pretty cool.
Yep.
Because, I mean, you know, Rock has done pretty good with the shows that he's been involved with. The Titan Games, the rebranding of, like, the American Gladiators and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, he's got a pretty good relationship with NBC. And I'm sure if it came down to it and they needed television once he, you know, relaunches to XFL in whatever manner he wants, that he could definitely run to NBC and they would pretty much be willing to, with his track record, be like, here you go, man. Here's the slots you need. You need Saturdays at 4? Okay, we got you. You need Sundays at, you know, at 1 and 4? Okay, here you go. I don't think that they would have a lot of qualms with taking another chance on, you know, The Rock being involved in something on their programming.
Right.
So, Mr. Mo, to the under, at this point, man, it's time for you to give the people your shout-outs and thank yous.
Shout-out to you, Don. Shout-out Sam, Greg, Mel. Shout out to Didi, Classic. Shout out Jupiter Julep. She gave and showed us some love yesterday, saying she enjoys us on the broadcast. Shout out to Miss V. Shout out everyone who tweets with us, J to the Max. all the ladies, all the globe ladies, the wrestle bays, you know, anybody who's down with us, you know, thanks for tweeting with us every week in the hashtags. And let's just see where it's going to go the next week.
All right. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Moten underscore Reese, for joining me once again for this week's edition of the Rawcast. Give a shout out to Miss Cammy D, who's always in the live tweets. Give a special shout out to her. She's usually the first one there putting the hashtag out. So we definitely appreciate her and everybody else who rocks with the Rawcast, NXT cast, Dynamite cast, SmackDown Matters each and every week.
Sammy.
Give a big shout out to all the members of the Glow and all the Wrestle Bays. Give a shout out to the gentleman over there at the Push podcast. Please give those guys a listen as they talk about the news and current events that's going on during the week of pro wrestling with color. Also, check out The Dark Match over on the Patreon page, patreon.com/CSPN Media. There you can find me and Miss Simi as we talk about AEW Dynamite. You can also hear the pre and post show conversations that take place before all the recordings here on the WrestleCast Network. So this past week, you could hear me and Mr. Mo to the underscore Reese go in depth about hashtags in wrestling and what they mean for today's modern fans. Then also me and Anwar Starwin, we talk a little hip hop, we talk a little wrestling, talk a little virus, and we just talk about, you know, just life type stuff, me and him, as we had our candid conversations before the latest Cast of Strong Style episode that we recorded together. So more content over on the Patreon page. That's once again patreon.com/CSPN Media. Become a patron, get the extra content, support the podcast. Also support the podcast over on CSPN.us by clicking on the tab that says keep our podcast free. Do some shopping with the sponsors that come out of that drop down menu, and some of your purchase will come back to the CSPN to help keep the shows free each and every week. So for my co-host Moten underscore Reese, I'm your host, Don DeLaRente. Thank you for listening to The Rawcast. Stay tuned for the parting promo.
Is my respect for you not enough? Just last week, I came out to this ring and I told the entire world that you had my respect, but you choose to come out here. You choose to repay me by telling the world in turn that I was handed everything, that I don't even want to be here. Let me ask you something, Drew. If I didn't want to be here, then why the hell am I here? I've made my money. I'm here because I want to be here. I'm here because I enjoy coming down to that ring each and every week, hitting RKOs and punt kicking heads. Now I appreciate your fighting spirit. I truly do, which is why it's gonna be that much more sweet at SummerSlam when I hit you with an RKO and punt kick you in the skull and take that WWE title away from you. Now you say that I should have been fired years ago. You're right. I should have been fired over and over and over again. I should have been fired multiple times, but I wasn't fired. You were fired. You want to know why? Because I am more valuable to this company than you ever were or ever will be. I have been given chance after chance, second chances, third chances, four, five, six, the list goes on. I have been given those chances, Drew, because I am the chosen one. Then, now, and forever.
I don't see a leader standing before me. I don't see somebody the boys in the back respect. I see a selfish. Here's what's gonna happen at SummerSlam, Randy. I have a whole bunch of receipts to cash in. A bunch of receipts for me, for some of the guys on the current roster, some of our former superstars, every legend you have ever kicked in the damn head. Randy at SummerSlam, I'm gonna rip off your head. And I promise you, I swear to you, Randy, you're sure as hell gonna see